Hey, listen up.
Yeah, we here and we locked in. Let's keep it going all the way to the top 10. We fear the turtle, so it's no other option. Fred and Ryan, just watch them. Let's take it to the max.
It's the Shell and Tell.
They come with all the facts.
It's the Shell and Tell.
Let's take it to the max.
It's the Shell and Tell.
They come with all the facts.
It's the Shell and Tell.
What's up, Terp fans? Fred, Ryan, and Ahmed back for another episode of the Shell and Tell podcast. It's Thursday, October 21st. Coming off this bye week as our Terps get set to return to continue to Big Ten football. But before we do that, we're going to take a look at the new depth chart after a few more devastating injuries and some big guys, some key contributors making their return.
Yeah, we're going to break down the key players in this Minnesota Gophers matchup we'll be seeing this weekend.
Yeah, and we'll get a chance to talk about a couple of key updates out of practice and cover a new football commit.
Sounds good. But before we get started with football, I know last week we kind of dove into basketball a little bit for the first time in a while. Not a lot has changed, but there has been some recent news around the team as the AP releases their first preseason poll, has Maryland ranked at number 21 overall.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty fair ranking. A couple new pieces and obviously some, national media questions on who can replace Wiggins. But I think, overall, I think this is a pretty complete team, as we talked about.
Yeah, for losing the kind of production we're talking about with Daryl Morcell and Aaron Wiggins, I mean, we totally reloaded. We got a lot of skill, but it hasn't been seen yet. I think 21 is very fair. I like it. The question is whether they get to 15 or 25 first.
Well, you know me, and you know how I feel about preseason rankings, and you know how I feel about overall AP rankings. They don't mean anything to me at this point. Fats, newcomer, the rising star, the young buck, comes in saying that they're maybe a little underrated, according to him.
Yeah, he said he's going to have to prove it, but he had to say they're underrated. I like the confidence. It reminds me of a little guy that knows how to play basketball. That kind of arrogance that comes from that. I think we've seen this before.
Yeah. Especially that. I mean, I think Andy Katz, I noticed him today when he was breaking down Fats Russell. He named him the 19th best player in the Big Ten. He noticed that his change of pace and his speed with the ball in his hands, Mark Turgeon noticed it as well. And then everyone, obviously they've noticed just the ability to return with that inside out game with Kudus in there. So just overall, I think this is a pretty intriguing 21 team for Maryland.
Yeah, I mean, he's the 19th best, they're saying there, and he's not the only one up with high accolades. You got Eric Ayala, who was added to the Jerry West Award watch list, and Dante Scott to the Carl Malone Award watch list. There's a lot of people getting a lot of national attention on this team.
Yeah, and I think that's completely justified. I think Ayala, everyone kind of knows, he's kind of stepping into that increased role, moving from the one to the two and kind of creating some more opportunities. And Dante Scott was the guy that really was, you can make the argument, a little positionless, played a little bit three, four, five, but he's going to move back to the four this year. A lot of expectations that he'll be able to take that next step. Turgeon's really talked about his consistency, going into the gym, every day and getting, the repetitions, things like that. So, mounting expectations and kind of show what he's shown these first 2 years. Not a surprise to start out the season.
I'm excited, man. I'm excited to see what Eric Ayala can bring back at the two guard position, not being the facilitator, having a guy like Fats Russell in here to distribute the ball a little bit more. Dante Scott, again, another guy whose game has improved year over year. Hopefully we see that same trend like we talked about last week with Hakeem Hart. Again, I know it's every year, Ryan, but I am excited about the depth on this team, just because, like I said, I think we should have a really good rotation.
I heard it from one of the other pundits when I was driving down the road, and I thought of you immediately. They were saying, this is truly a team that's 9 or 10 deep, and I'm like, I don't know. I'm still holding my breath. It could be. I can tell you what was deep is that lineup last night at the Midnight Mile. They had a lot of kids out there.
So tell me a little bit about that. I don't know much about the Midnight Mile. Is it something new? Is it something that
Let's let the student tell us about this, right?
Yeah, so, I mean, it was something that they used to do way back when, and, obviously now it's kind of replacing Midnight Madness. Exactly. So it's kind of making
I miss
it
so much. But they did ruin it when they took it away from Midnight, when they made it earlier in like a family event. The Midnight Madness was amazing.
Yeah, there was one year I feel like it was at like 6 o'clock or something like that.
Yeah, and that was the end of Midnight Madness.
Yeah, it was just a very weird feel to it. But at the end of the day, I mean, Midnight Mile, you know, it gets a lot more students engaged, things like that. So had a really good turnout last night. You know, a lot of players were available. Turgeon got a chance to, you know, talk about just the ability for fans to come back, that, you know, that connection. So just kind of the official, I guess the second official start for the basketball season for him.
I like the creativity of how they got guys out there. I know they were giving away a scooter. They had all these different giveaways and things to get people out there. It's showing that the departments are paying attention. They're really driving the engagements for all activities. It's not just put this out here and the super fans will show up, to really get people engaged. Because when you engage people at that level, that's how they become donors 5 years from now. Like, that's, they have to have these lifelong memories ingrained in them at that moment.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think I saw one was they were giving away like a free chance to travel with the team on for a road game. That's, I think, pretty cool. Kind of made me want to apply for undergrad again.
Well, as excited as I am to talk about basketball, I haven't given up on the football team yet, so we got to dive into that. Remember, these Terps are still 4-2. Goal number one going into this year was getting to a bowl, and that's still a realistic goal. But those winnable games, we talked about it last week, those winnable games are coming fewer and farther in between with the remaining schedule. Got to win two more to go bowling, right? And we talked about probably having three more winnable games on the remaining schedule. So we got a real, real important one coming up here against Minnesota that you want to get at least one of those out of the way right away.
Yeah, and we're not the only ones that think that there's still these winnable games on the schedule. I know that Pro Football Focus seems to agree with us on this outlook. They're projecting still Maryland to get 6.2 wins. All right, so that would be two more wins with a slim chance at a third that they're looking at, which is exactly what we were saying. You got to get two out of three of these remaining winnable games. And there's other people are a little bit more pessimistic.
Yeah, I mean, the ESPN, it looks like ESPN FBI is a little pessimistic, still has us getting to another win, projecting 5.5, so 1.5 on their schedule so far. So still a chance that Maryland can get there. But again, you know, they have some winnable games. They have the games against the Michigan, Michigan State, Penn State. So so it'll be interesting.
Well, if you go off my math, 5.5, you round up to six. We're bowling. Just got to get to that six win.
They're telling me there's a chance. Anything over five means they are saying there is a chance at six. So right, they're still there. You know, over six sounds a lot better to me, saying there's a chance at seven. But, you know, they still know that there's a chance. 67% chance, that's pretty accurate in my mind. I think that's about what we're looking at. Now, that drops really bad if we lose this game.
Well, I know the morale around the fan base has been a little somber over the last couple of weeks. A couple of big butt kickings to some really tough competition at the top of the Big Ten. And then obviously coming off of that, we had a couple of really big injuries, specifically at the wide receiver position. So let's, before we get into the Minnesota game, why don't we go down the list, kind of give people an update on some injuries, guys that are out now for the remainder of the year, and some guys coming back.
Yeah, obviously the big news out of this week was Deshaun Jones. He's going to have season-ending lower body and surgery. That was, I think, a little bit expected after he went down on the second play of the game against Ohio State. But the surprise was outside linebacker, Jack linebacker, Darrell Nachami, went down with an upper body season-ending surgery. So that is a pretty big blow to a linebacker room that was already thin inside. So to lose that kind of leadership, that a guy like Nachami, honestly, who's really come on at times this year, especially off the edge, I think that's a big loss. But they will have a chance to probably get three guys back, likely at least two. Linebacker Brandon Jennings, he's missed missed the Iowa game and the Ohio State game. Was game time decision for Ohio State, but obviously that bye week really helped with that healing process. So he should be back. Was been out of practice on Tuesday. Source told me that he was there on Wednesday. And then both cornerbacks, Kenny and Ja'Quarian Bennett, should be good. It's game time decision. But so far, so good. So we shall see.
Well, Brandon Jennings is still undefeated, so we're going to keep that streak going for him.
Yeah, he missed a couple games when we needed him the most. But it'll be good to have him back. It sucks to see a guy like Nachami go down, especially the kind of year that he was having. For me, it was kind of an unexpected year out of him. You know, his contribution because of injuries has been really, really good this year. So it sucks to lose a guy like that. But on the back end, we talked about how good this secondary was going into this year. Well, they've been really depleted on that back end with the secondary. Getting a couple guys back in the we'll call them the Bennett brothers out there would be a big boost for that secondary.
Yeah, and I actually asked Loxley about that, you know, kind of if they were to come back, you know, how does that kind of help? And, you know, he said, well, just the experience that they bring, number one, is, you know, obvious from that standpoint. And then two, it allows them to stay playing play in their man coverage a little bit more as they like to do. You know, Loxley mentioned that they've kind of had to switch to zone these last couple of weeks at times just out of necessity, just because some of the guys just weren't ready for that, especially against Ohio State with that caliber wide receiver. So to get a guy like Jakorian back, who looked really good those first couple of weeks, Kenny Bennett, who's really made some strides over the last couple of years, who's been a pretty critical depth piece in the rotation, you know, that's definitely really big. And obviously you're going against Tanner Morgan, who doesn't exactly light it up, but he can make you pay for it if you make a mistake.
Yeah, these Golden Gophers, they're going to be a heck of a test with a very experienced lineup out there. You know, their quarterback being the number one in that lineup. They're 4-2 record here. Their best win comes against Purdue. That's now 3-2, but just beat Iowa, so that's pretty impressive after the beating that we took from them. They did have a pretty bad loss there against Bowling Green at 2-5. But you know, we can't say we haven't been there before, losing to a MAC team like that. So it's kind of a conundrum. What are you going to get from these guys? They definitely had a good loss, if you want to call it. They kept it close with Ohio State, but that was a whole different team. You still had Muhammad Ibrahim out there running wild. He basically was beating Ohio State by himself. And that was also the first start from a redshirt freshman quarterback that Ohio State didn't quite look like the team we're seeing now.
Yeah, I mean, I think this Minnesota team is kind of really intriguing. Like you alluded to, just that running back room, they kind of had to redefine themselves a little bit. So I think that part is pretty interesting. But they had another guy who's just, you know, third man, next man up. He eclipsed 100 yards last week to beat Nebraska. So, but you know, with Minnesota, it's kind of like those Midwestern Big Ten teams where it kind of all starts in the trenches with them.
Yeah, losing a guy like Muhammad's obviously a huge blow. I mean, he was the center focus of their offense, but it does sound like over the last couple of weeks they formed a pretty good rotation, kind of a running back by committee type thing. And like you said, they've gotten some good contributions from some young guys. So you can't completely discredit the run game. But, you know, you got a veteran, a super senior, like we talked about in Tanner Morgan, coming in 6'2", 215 pounds senior. Averaging 150 yards, 153 yards a game, but less than 60% completion percentage. Not really much of a rushing threat. He's just kind of that pocket passing type quarterback. This is a game where if the defense, I think, could get to him early and often, create some pressure, get him rattled, that's how Maryland can stay in this game.
Yeah, you look at this. I was surprised because, like Ahmed said, usually this is a trenches type game.
Right.
But they've allowed 14 sacks this year. That's not a great number for a team that prides itself on the offensive line. Of course, we do have a few edge rushers. I'd like to see Chop get in the action here, get one or two this week. And with Jennings coming back, he's another one in there. You look at this, and this is kind of a game of teams on opposite sides of the spectrum. You talk about the super senior here. You have another super senior at wide receiver. Maryland's on that young side. All of our stars pretty much are allowed back next year and probably are back next year. So you look at that, especially today, there was the midseason ESPN All-American article that came out, which had two of our players on it for the true freshmen. So you got Chop Youngbull and Brendan Jennings, both made that list. Only six linebackers noted, and two of them are your Terps. I mean, this is I know everybody wants to win and win now, but like if you look at it, our stars will be back. We are not built yet. We do not. Yes, this every year is Locke's recruitment, but it's not the players that are playing there. Like it's going to take time to build to this, and we're going to get there if we keep getting recruitment like we have gotten.
Yeah, but you got to play well, man. You got to leave a good impression with some of these kids because, again, we see how much happens in the transfer portal, people leaving, coming and going, and that kind of thing, and you don't want to finish this season on a sour note, man. I really think keeping these guys around and keeping the morale good is going to be centered around getting to that bowl, right? So again, this game is super important. And yeah, you want your key contributors, even if they are at a freshman level, to be out there as much as you can, get them as much experience as they can, get them buying into the program and believing. So I think having Jennings and Chop out there is important, not just for this year, but for future years. Yeah, going back to Minnesota, you mentioned the wide receiver core. Obviously, we're really familiar with one Rashad Bateman, who is now in the NFL doing his thing. Is there anybody else on this wide receiver core, a, you know, skill type player that we should be keeping an eye on in this game that might be a threat?
Yeah, Chris Altman Bell is kind of the first guy to know in that room. He's only missed a pair of games so far this year. Has 18 catches for 231 yards and a pair of touchdowns. But he's been pretty dynamic. Him and Morgan kind of building on their relationship and connection from last season into this season. Mike Brown Stevens. He's another guy. He's had a couple catches for 197 yards, so he's been able to kind of be pretty dynamic when he's in the open space. And then they got a couple others with double-digit catches and Dylan Wright, Daniel Jackson, and Brevin Span Ford. But Chris Altman Bell, it's kind of where it all starts with him. But be kind of intrigued to see how Maryland matches up with him, because Sarheap Spill has been going against some nickel corners at times, has been going against the number one when needed. But I think that's where having a guy like Jacory, and if he does come back, going against Chris Altman Bell, I think would be a pretty intriguing matchup.
Yeah, his average isn't great, only 57, but he blew up against Nebraska. He put up 11, 103, and 1. You have four others that are kind of just middling around 20 to 40 yards. They're a little bit of threat, but you can tell just by these stats, this is a run-first team. That's their goal. They're right. Going to go, and they're going to run right at you. They're going to run down your throat, and pretty much every pass that I've seen from them is a play action. I would say 90% of their passes are on play action. So if we can stop the run, then those are a lot less effective. So it's really good getting the Bennett brothers back, as Fred called them, because we need to be able to play some man and get more people in the box, let Jennings come downhill and fill and be able to stop these running backs they do have left.
All right, so we got a good idea of what to expect on the offensive side of the ball. Let's jump over to the defensive side, because this is going to be a big game, I think, for Talia. I think this is going to be a big game for Teyon Fleet Davis. I think it's going to be a big game for Chig, you know, because, again, losing your two biggest wide receiver threats, or two of the top three, and Jayshon Jones and Dante Demas, you got to replace that production somewhere. And if that means you're not handing the ball off to Teyon Fleet Davis more, getting him more involved in the passing game, getting Chig more involved in the passing game, getting him more targets, you got to find the replacement. And what kind of defensive presence does this team present that might bring up some challenges for us?
Yeah, I think you kind of hit the nail on the head right there. I think with Minnesota, you know, they're pretty strong on both sides of the trenches. Offensive line, you know, I got three guys that are at least 6'6". We got a tackle that's 6'9". But on defensive side of the ball, they got Boye Mafi. He's a defensive end. Really, statistically, he's right up there with Sam O. And amongst the Big Ten, he's has pretty good size. He's a grad transfer. This is a pretty experienced defense as a whole. Added a grad transfer linebacker from Abilene Christian as well. So I think overall they've done really well against the run. They allow sixth least rushing yards per game, 88 yards per game. So this is a pretty experienced team. They're kind of seeing that. You kind of start with that defensive line play that's been helping in the back end. But they are vulnerable to the big plays a little bit.
On those big plays, you got to watch out for going the other way. As we saw against Iowa, those big plays can end up very poorly. Their DB, Tyler Newbin, 6'2", 210 junior, leads the team with two interceptions. Definitely somebody that's got the length kind of built like that Loxley defensive backs that he's
prototype.
Been going after. Yeah, the long and lean that we've been seeing him recruit. So somebody you want to probably stay away from. I would imagine he'll be draped all over Rack, if not just go away from him in any one play.
I was going to say, it seems to be their saving grace are the turnovers. I mean, they've got 8 combined forced fumbles and interceptions on the year, so that's going to be something that's going to be a challenge for the Terps, because last couple of weeks, although they did better against Ohio State, that's been the problem, turning the ball over, right, and shooting yourself in the foot and doing, you know, making mental mistakes, forcing balls into windows that you shouldn't. I think that's why I say this is a big game for Talia, because I don't think that this Minnesota offense is going to put up a ton of points, right? So you don't need to score early and often. You just have to be efficient with the ball. Every time you get it, march down the field. You don't have to take those big chunk plays if they're not there. Take what the defense gets you, move the chains, and be efficient and score on every possession you can.
Yeah, PJ Fleck got in trouble this week for saying that it was the culture at Minnesota that won that last game instead of over Nebraska and not the talent. Kind of throwing shade at the other school. But if you look at this, it really is. Like, this is a really well-coached team. They don't make mistakes. They're in position. They you know, don't have the penalty problems that we have. They're not making turnovers. So there really is this culture. We saw last year in person, they have this thing where the ball is not allowed to hit the ground, where they have to take the ball and hand it to the ref after every play. It's a little gimmicky, a little weird, but like, it kind of goes back to that Ravens thing with, like, you know, Ed Reed saying, pick up your towels off the floor. Don't leave your locker room looking like this. It's the little things. Mm-hmm. So I get it. I think PJ Fleck's a really good coach. I personally don't like him for some reason. He gives me like the heebie-jeebies. I'm like I don't want that to be a Maryland coach. It's kind of just like too, I think it's just too Randy Edselish. It's just like fake military style thing that I can't handle. But they're really well coached and they get the job done just doing their job soundly.
Yeah, and I think kind of the biggest thing that maybe concerns me the most with Maryland against this team is that I think with Maryland's defense against Minnesota's offense, I think Minnesota's offensive line has done a really good job of just with max protection. I think that Loxie's noted that in pretty much every opportunity when asked about the Gophers, that they pretty much, like you said, Ryan, they use that offensive line to their advantage. They run, and then they build the RPO offense, the play actions, and they build on that. So that's why you're kind of seeing these Minnesota teams, especially now without Muhammad Ibrahim and then Trey Potts, who's pretty elusive guy, who's a really good number two running back for him. And that's just really unfortunate that they had their top two, and then now they have their third. So I'm not, and Chig, actually, when he said it live, it even stuck out to me. But this week, someone asked him, you know, what Gophers, what sticks out on tape? And Chig was like, yeah, you know, it starts, they're a very veteran team, very well coached, and they're very good defensive line. He was like, secondary is okay. And I think that's exactly it, because I think when you have Dante Demas, when you have Deshaun Jones that are out, I think you have a guy like Marcus Fleming who can be more of a bigger option, I guess you could say, more ability to be more of an impactful player on those jet sweeps or out in the flat. And then you have a guy like Chig who can be dynamic in that second level, a guy like Corey Dyches, who in Maryland uses those two tight ends. So I do think that Maryland has those opportunities in the passing game. But I think kind of on both sides, it does start with protection and then getting after Tanner Morgan, which I think will be harder than we think.
I hate hearing that, Ahmed. Not only is it that it's going to be hard to get Tanner Morgan, but I hate hearing about this like overconfidence in the secondary, because it makes me feel like we're going to be back at that Iowa play calling where we're good enough to throw on these corners and we're going to throw all the time. I understand that that's an awful hard defense to run against. They're holding opponents under 90 yards on the ground and allowing 233 through the air. Sure, you might win throwing the ball, but you can't give up on the run. We have to keep running to keep them honest. We cannot just go out there and assume that he's going to be the surgical mastermind to pick them apart. It will fall apart on you. So even if you're only getting 2 yards a rush, you got to keep running for those 2 yard plays, or those pass plays are not going to work.
Yeah, I just want to say I 100% agree. I mean, I think Maryland's offensive play calling against Iowa and just the inability, the lack of commitment to the run game, I think that is something that Maryland kind of looked at the tape. They want to, you know, kind of throw that out and make sure that they do establish a run. And I think, you know, we kind of asked Loxley about the lack of number two running back right now. I mean, you kind of see Challen, and then sometimes it's Isaiah Jacobs, sometimes it's Penny Boone. And then, you know, so you're seeing kind of multiple different options. I mean, you've seen Colby McDonald, Roman Hemby a little bit, which is a little bit surprising. But I do think that Maryland does have these options. And then at the end of the day, they have enough backs, complimentary backs, and these guys that can, I guess, complement the passing game to kind of keep that room fresh and help this offense stay efficient.
So we talk about running the ball, can't give up on the run. We talked about Talia kind of living to fight another day, throwing the ball away, don't force it, don't take the sack, be efficient. I said limiting turnovers, that's going to be a key to this game. But the other part of it is the negative plays, the things that you can control. You know, the penalties. We've seen the trend get better, again, from Iowa to Ohio State. So I want to see that trend continue. Any other keys out there that we might have missed that you guys want to bring up?
I think one thing is we were pretty critical of the linebacker core last week when we did our grades, especially Ruben with tackles. I think this is a week that you could see those numbers fixed. I think that with having the cornerbacks back, with having them not being very talented at throwing the ball versus running the ball, I think these numbers of tackles are going to swing and swing quickly back to the linebacker core, hopefully, the way they don't make it past the linebacker core while they're running the ball. So I think it could be a really big day for either Ruben or bringing back our freshman running back there. But I would like to see big numbers. Like, give me 10 tackles, Ruben. Fix your numbers.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, I think just having Brandon Jennings back, I mean, as expected, you know, that's just the expectation kind of going into this weekend. But if he does, you know, play, I think just kind of that takes a lot of the pressure off of Ruben. I think he's kind of been asked to do a lot. And I think that maybe he's kind of been playing through some injuries. I mean, he did get banged up earlier in the year, didn't miss any time, played through it. Obviously, everyone's coming off that bye. So you do have some guys that, you know, we're nursing the nicks and bruises, things like that. And, you know, they're feeling a little bit better now. But yeah, like you said, I think this just the front seven as a whole, it does improve. I am very intrigued by that jack spot with Lautez Rogers there. And then, you know, how much does Chop play? Because I think it could be quite a bit.
All right, so we talked about the injuries at the wide receiver core. I talked about replacing that kind of production, you know, either passing the ball more out of the backfield, Teyon Fleet Davis being a part of that, Chigakonkwo and the tight end group being a part of that. But at the wide receiver position specifically, what have you heard this week around practice? Who else is going to be kind of getting thrown into the mix here? Obviously, you know, you got a veteran out there like Brian Cobbs. You expect him to be out there a little bit more. Any other guys that we should be looking at to see more time?
Yeah, and shout out Brian for it was his birthday this past week. So
nice.
Shout out to him. Happy birthday, Brian. There you go. But yeah, two good tidbits. I posted it for premium subscribers, but kind of going into this weekend, Nick DeGennaro, he had a broken hand, was actually in practice with the club on, but no problem with him. He was catching passes. He just wasn't playing in the game, but he now has that club off. He's good to go. And then Day-Day McDougal, you know, was just kind of working through some personal things, and he should be back. He's all good. He's been practicing. So that wide receiver room definitely needs some guys with length and length with speed. And Maryland did pitch the idea of him filling that role kind of like Demas when he was a high school recruit. So it shall be pretty interesting to see how he fits in.
I'm actually kind of excited to see Nick get a little bit of playing time. I think the last time we actually saw him was the Minnesota game last year. Am I right on that? Was it Minnesota that he came in late in that game? Was that Minnesota?
I know it was Northwestern, I believe.
Oh, Northwestern.
No, you know what? I take that back because we did not score a touchdown against Northwestern. So I do think you were right in the Minnesota game. But yeah, it has been quite some time. And I think that's a guy that, you know, obviously he was banged up this year, but also just a guy that, you know, just became a casualty just of the veteran wide receivers that are ahead of him. And it's also just a compliment to really seeing no guys that have transferred. I mean, Carlos Carrier is a guy that, you know, hasn't really gotten too much consistent playing time, but he's stuck around the entire time. So so I think Nick DeGennaro is a guy that definitely has an opportunity ahead of him now that he's healthy. I do think he's kind of intriguing as a slot receiver where I've heard he ran in 4.3s, 4.4s when he was a high school recruit when he got to Maryland. And that made a big role in him becoming a take for Maryland. So will be really interesting now that he's back.
Yeah, I'd really like to see him get run. I think it's one of the more underrated injuries that we've had this year. The kid just shows grit and toughness, and that's like something you really love to see, especially that out of that slot role, like you said. We definitely had high hopes for him. Obviously, you know, we had some big boys in front of him anyway, but I was hoping to see more of him earlier in this year, and that injury just kind of stole that from it. The other injury that Locks mentioned in his press conference was Isaiah Jacobs still being banged up. Can you tell us more about that, what he's going through, and whether we're going to see him anytime soon?
Yeah, he's been battling a foot injury since the first or second week of the season. And it's, I mean, honestly, it does sound like it's been good. I did see him at practice this week. So I think that's kind of something where they see how he feels on Saturday, and then they just kind of gauge the reps from there. But everything I've heard, he's progressing, but it's still it is still lingering pain for him. So, and I mean, Penny Boone, I know he was kind of banged up at times. He came into the season with a concussion, so I think you're kind of also approaching that part in the season where a lot of these guys are trying to play through some of these stuff. So, I do think that is a big reason why we're not seeing that consistent number two running back right now.
Well, hopefully he gets better soon. He can get back out on the field. Now, there were some recruiting news that released over the last couple of days. A local recruit, before we get into our predictions and everything, I do want to dive into this. Calvert Hall recruit, defensive end Daniel Owens committed. Is that right, Ahmed?
That is right. And I was at Calvert Hall yesterday for their practice. You know, I got to say, there's very few times where you meet a kid and you are just so impressed by him. I remember when I first time I covered Keandre Jones' game, I remember leaving my job from Morgan Stanley and thinking, you know, doing my side job right now. And I'm standing in front of a guy that's 5-6 years younger than me. And I just found him so impressive just because of how mature he was. And I just kind of always had that standard in my head. And Daniel Owens is exactly that. And that's really a big reason why he also became not even just a take, but like a priority for Maryland from the spring into summer. And now, you know, Maryland has known about this for 4 or 5 weeks now, but I really like him kind of on the field. He's 6'2", 245. He's a defensive end, but he's going to be playing a little bit of defensive tackle, a little bit interior defensive line this week. But when they play Gilman on Saturday, he visited first on July 30th. That was for a 7-on-7, got a very, very brief tour, and then he came back for the West Virginia game. He plans to return to Maryland for the Indiana game, but also another part was his sister goes to Maryland right now. So family was already familiar with, you know, the engineering track, which is something that Daniel Owens wants to do. Again, kind of back onto the field. Really like this kid. I think he has a guy with pretty good length to him. He's done a pretty good job from his sophomore to senior year of reshaping his body. And even still with that reshaping his body, I think he still has some way to go. And that's why that year of strength and conditioning can really help. But I do think that he does have some good burst. He has some athleticism, and he does have some pass moves that he's able to replicate and do that on a consistent basis. So that's kind of why you know, Maryland kind of liked him for quite some time now. And a really quality add, and just the perfect kind of guy when you talk about building culture and trenches and whatnot. I think this is it's a perfect take for Maryland.
Well, you fans out there that are giving up on this season, just take note of this. I mean, you're getting a commit right now. They haven't given up on the season. He's coming to the next home game. So why don't you guys not give up on the season and come down there and show out and show them that stadium can still fill up? I think, you know, we're going to just have to win this weekend. And when we get that taken care of, a lot of these naysayers will calm down a little bit, because that 6 will look a lot more realistic when you're sitting on 5 wins.
Yeah, I mean, it's huge to get a kid like this. Again, keeping a guy that's in your own backyard, keeping James Franklin and the whiteout at Penn State out of there, because I know he was in the mix of it as well, over Rutgers and Syracuse as well. So this is big. And it's all exciting news to hear about this guy. I love a kid that's got, you know, the total package, you know what I mean? The personality behind it and the drive and the want to. So it's exciting to get a guy like this. Yeah. Any other thing around recruiting?
Well, no, you did mention Penn State. I did want to point out that Franklin and co-defensive coordinator for the Nittany Lions, Anthony Poindexter, they were supposed to go to Calvert Hall on Friday. So they were still interested. They wanted to go see also Denise Sutton out of McDonough. So got a chance to also see D.O., but obviously with his commitment now, that is not going to happen anymore. And kind of outside of that, you know, obviously last week with the bye week, the staff was able to set a lot more visits for official visits, excuse me, with a lot of their existing targets. Obviously, offensive tackle, if you're over a subscriber over at Inside the Black and Gold, you know, offensive tackle, cornerback, and safety are really the three big priority positions for the staff to kind of close out this cycle. So been able to get a lot of DBs finalized for their official, a couple offensive linemen. You know, we've broken down a couple names so far, and all these details where they stand, where Maryland views them at, is available to our paid subscribers at Inside the Black and Gold.
That's awesome. That's awesome. All right, let's get into these game predictions. Again, Terps now 4-2, Minnesota 4-2. Ryan, I'll let you kick this one off. How do you see this game going out?
All right, this is the first one I'm going to admit. I have no idea what I predicted on Birdland BS. I usually try to keep them the same. It's been 2 weeks since then, so who knows? I think I'm going to go right now. Terps are winning it. 27-24. It's going to be a tight one. It's going to be a good game.
All right, Ahmed, what do you got?
I am a little bit of a pessimist going into this game. I have Minnesota winning 31-23. I'm just really concerned, you know, whether Maryland can get that pressure on Tanner Morgan. I just think that Minnesota offensive line, that max protection that they run, I think is, again, like I said earlier, I think it's going to be harder than we think to kind of get that going. I think losing Nchami on the edge, I think that that is going to be an adjustment for him. And really intrigued by Lautez Rodgers, but I think this is also a huge opportunity for Demian Robinson to kind of get into that lineup. But yeah, so 31-23, this Gophers defense can allow a good amount of points if we can attack and be efficient in the pass game. But kind of as of now, I'm, you know, in the remains to be seen kind of boat for Maryland and Talia.
All right.
Well, so Ahmed's wrong, so Fred's next.
Yeah, for me, so Tanner Morgan doesn't scare me. What I've watched of him this year, especially not having his big back back there to keep defenses honest, doesn't scare me. And getting a guy like Brandon Jennings back, getting those couple of pieces in the secondary back, all that's going to do is make this unit stronger, especially in man coverage. Yeah, there's still a very formidable front in the run game, but I trust our defense to be able to stop that run game. And I think our offense, they needed this bye week. They needed this break. It was like the perfect timing for this. And I think Talia, with the extra week of prep, you know, being on the road, not having to do it in front of a big crowd at home or anything, I think that bodes well for Talia. It's kind of weird to say that he might do better on the road, but I personally just think he does. So I think that the Maryland offense will be able to do enough to keep them in this game, and I think they win it late. I've got the Terps winning 24-21 in a close game, but I think they do just enough.
Yeah, I do think that it's going to be a close game. I think, I mean, honestly, historically, I think there was just that one year when Max Bordenschlager started and Minnesota just went on the tear. You know, I know that was a blowout. I think, believe it was 52-10, if I'm not mistaken. But really, other than that, kind of like in Indiana, a lot of these games have been exciting, high scoring, back and forth. So fully expect that again. And I think Maryland has a lot to prove. Again, we talked about winnable games. Maryland knows it's a winnable game, and coming off that bye, kind of hit that reset. So we'll see. Road games in the Big Ten are tough, but it's going to be a fun matchup.
We definitely got blown out in 2019. Me and Fred were out in Minnesota watching that. That went straight up.
Yeah, that was rough. Great, great experience, but that was a rough game to watch. All right, so we opened up the mailbag again this week. We had a few questions come in through Twitter. We had a few questions come in from Inside Black and Gold. First question comes from Aaron Franklin. He's been a supporter of the show since day one on Twitter. He says, do you feel like this Saturday game against Minnesota is the most critical of Locksley's tenure thus far? Win and you're looking good for a bowl, lose and the next two wins might be hard to come by. I don't think he's on the hot seat, but for recruiting and fan buy-in, getting to a bowl is huge. This caught and falls right in line with everything we've been saying.
Yeah, I'm not ready to say it's the most critical game of Loxie's tenure so far. I would have even said that maybe the Iowa game would have been, just kind of with that 4-0 mark in year three, just kind of everything going into it. And right now I just kind of think that, you know, you just kind of have to wait for all the results from year three and then maybe kind of hit that reset button. I feel like we're kind of past that point, unless Maryland can pull off like a Penn State upset or something like that, where this week, I mean, not this weekend, I don't think this weekend would be an upset, but unless Maryland can take that massive step forward, I think you just review year three and then that most critical game comes in year four.
Yeah, I don't know if it's most critical for Loxley or most critical for the recruiting, but for this year especially, it's most critical for the fans. Like, even if you make a bowl by winning the next two and losing this one, it might be too late. You lose two games against good teams that people have granted overreacted, but when you lose this winnable game, you might not get them to turn their TVs back on. You might not get them to come back into the seats. So for the fan side of things, this is a very critical matchup.
I do personally think this is the most critical matchup for Loxley's tenure this time with Maryland. The reason I say that is because wins and losses, he really wasn't judged on year one and year two, right? Because he's building the program. But we said going into this year, it's crucial for this program and for Loxley to go bowling this year. And up until this point, we haven't gotten to a game where it's like, well, if you lose this game, you still got time to, you know, pull it out and win two more. If you lose this game, you have to win the next two winnable games. You have to in order to go bowling. So I do think that this is the most critical. And I think all your points are valid from a recruiting standpoint and just a program standpoint as well. So yeah, in my opinion, I do think this is the most critical of his career or his Maryland tenure this go around.
Yeah, I can understand that. And I do think that I understand the perspective of like, you know, recruiting buy and whatnot. But I think fan support, I mean, if they, hypothetically, if they do lose this week and they go next week, Indiana homecoming, there's going to be fans there. I do think if they pull that off, it kind of helps shift the needle in the other way.
Yeah. As the problem with it is as good as Rutgers kind of looks under Greg Schiano and the new coaching staff, everyone's going to look at it as, well, you needed Rutgers to get that bowl. You know what I mean? Like, it's all down to you beating the only person left in the Big Ten that might be worse than you in everyone's minds. I don't disrespect Rutgers like that anymore. They're growing as fast, if not faster than we are. But there's a lot of people with that mindset of it's Rutgers.
Right. All right. So the next question comes from John Diggs, who's a new contributor on Inside Black and Gold. He says, which commit has the highest upside? He didn't mention which class, but I'll go real quickly first and just give you my take. I think the commit that has the biggest upside is quarterback AJ Swan. That's a kid that, one, is a big priority. Two, every time I watch him, he gets better. And I think nationally, people are starting to see that as well. So I really like his trajectory, and I think his ceiling is very, very high, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think that's very right. I think just kind of the way he sees the field, his vision, his pocket presence, the way he kind of just uses his mobility both to just kind of take the yards available to him and again to extend the plays. He just has a really good feel for the game, and that is very evident. He makes some very impressive throws, and so I think that he's definitely a good choice. I think Colton Deary is a guy. He's going to come in. I think he's played exceptionally higher than his rating. I think he's a consensus three-star right now. But I think that guy, once he comes in and once that center spot becomes a clear vacancy, or they get a chance to move Eric Harris to guard or whatnot. But Colton Deary is a guy. He can be a 3-4 year starter. If you've been following me, I've been very, very high on Kellen Wyatt. He's another linebacker out of Archbishop Spalding. He fits in as a Sam, and I've been able to see him kind of through scrimmages, through junior year, through spring season, and through fall season. I know he can cover. He covers well in space. He's a guy, he's a thumper. I think he has a really good IQ. And I think with that year of strength conditioning, he can be a pretty key contributor. So I think there's a couple of guys that maybe are a little bit better than their rating in this class.
I would have definitely went with the AJ Swan pick of Fred, so I'll give you my number two. My number two would be our 4-star wide receiver. We keep stacking wide receivers. It's what we're doing right now in Shalik Knotts. He seems to be paired up with AJ Swan. That's why he's coming here. They seem to be getting to know each other a little bit. So that tandem could be a lot of fun to watch. I really hope I'm right about that one.
I hope so too. Next question comes from also from Inside Black and Gold. I guess his screen name is just NC. Is that right, Ahmed?
That is correct.
All right. How much of the team's recruiting strategy has changed as a result of the transfer portal and immediate transfer? Is this a part of the reason why the recruiting class is so small up to now?
I wouldn't say they are correlated. Maryland, my expectation is they still go for that 20 mark or so around there. And then kind of with the transfer portal, whatnot, and just with the rule changes for their ability to exceed that 25 scholarship mark. I do think that's available. They know that they need some impact guys at some key positions on both sides of the ball. So, they are leaving some spots open, but, I also think that, there's just a lot of JUCO guys right now. And I think we've seen it kind of in years past once the football season ends for Maryland, and then the JUCO guys, you kind of see a lot pick up. They get on campus, the communication picks up everything. And then obviously we're going to see Jayshon Barham announce his commitment in the next couple of weeks. So I think there's a lot of new pieces, some existing pieces, some flip targets that, again, I've mentioned on the site before. They're on the big board. I have a running big board of every target, Maryland commit, all on the site for our paid subscribers. So I do think that they're mindful of the transfer portal, and they're mindful of some of these guys that can leave for the NFL. But I wouldn't be as pessimistic about the recruiting class right now.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, these JUCO kids are really important in these recruiting classes. They seem to come in bunches when they come. And also, like we talked about with this Minnesota versus us, we are still very heavy on the young talent. You need to bring in these older guys to spot fill, to kind of balance out your years of eligibility and have this kind of roll over with the top of your team being the ones on the field performing. So we've seen a lot of these guys work out. There were a lot of people pessimistic when we started digging deep into the JUCO realms, but it's worked for a lot of these guys.
Yeah, and you got to keep that pipeline open, man, because there's going to be years where you're going to rely heavily on that, and there's going to be years where you're not going to rely as heavily on it, but you need to have a good connection there with these big JUCO transfers, and I think Loxley and Crew's done a really, really good job with that. Next question comes from Clubber 1974. Can you provide any staff practice insights on the freshmen that are playing? We don't hear too much, but I know this staff keeps things close to the vest. I'm particularly interested in Chop, Taze, Akinbesete.
There
it is. From, Ed Porter. We've seen enough of Jackson to know.
Basically, all of our loaded defensive line class from this year.
Right? Yep, and obviously, like I mentioned earlier in the show, I think Chop is a guy that you've seen a good amount of so far this year. I think, especially with Jami, I think he's a guy that really kind of has the most to gain, especially as a young guy who's been given a lot of opportunities from the time he's arrived on campus till now. Tyzee's actually been playing a decent amount, sometimes in garbage time, sometimes he's been filling in because of injuries, things like that. And Akinbesete, I know he played a little bit in that Howard game, but Akinbesete, you got to remember, he's also pretty new to the game. And I mentioned that I could see him redshirting just because of how much he, from a technical perspective, he just needs to grow and be, like, learn at this Big Ten level. So he's doing well. And Porter, he was a guy that had some weight concerns kind of coming out of high school. Again, he's just a very impressive story just to get here, and he's doing a pretty good job of trimming his body down. I know he's down about 15 pounds or so, maybe could be a little bit more than that, but I know at least 15 from when he's arrived in late fall, or excuse me, late summer. And then Weston Wolf, I've seen him a good amount. Colby McDonald, he's a guy that has impressed a good amount. Roman Hemby is a guy that I expected to see a little bit more of, but yeah. No, he was battling through some nicks and bruises at the beginning of the season. So just kind of getting lost in the shuffle, but gets a chance to redshirt most likely now. So far, I think this is a freshman class that when all said and done, you're going to see a lot of impact guys.
All right. The last question from the mailbag comes from Ravens Terps. Are you worried about the current Maryland football recruiting rankings? And you know how I feel on rankings.
Yeah. Again, I don't, you know, honestly, I think you got to remember they're for the fans. I mean, I know I've told the story, but before about, you know, Brian Cobbs, when he was in high school, he was a two-star recruit. I remember, you know, a lot of people were very skeptical about, you know, what he fits, how he fits at the next level. Can he be a good wide receiver running a 4.8? And you just got to look at, you know, Maryland took him. Why did Maryland take him? How does he fit in? Dante Demas was a 3-star out of high school. Deshaun Jones was a 3-star out of high school. Narelle Nchami was a 3-star. Nick Cross was a 4-star for a long time. And then everyone realized, wow, you're pretty fast. And then he became a 4-star. So Maryland, I think right now you just gotta realize that you gotta be able to find these hidden gems to be able to hit. And then, you know, you round out your classes with your Shalik Knotts, with your AJ Swans, who should be a 4-star by absolutely everyone. It makes no sense. Shalik Knotts, again, you'll see Jayshon Barham, Maryland's in the top 3 for him. And then, you know, it's Loxley. So, you know, you're going to see some 4-stars once the season's over, right before signing day heats up. So I will never, ever be concerned about recruiting. I've said it before. I think if Maryland can win against these big teams or show that they make progress, local recruiting will sort itself out. They're still going to have some things to worry about, you know, with Penn State, that allure, you know, they're, you know, always on the cusp of the college football playoffs. But if Maryland just stays true to their plan, Loxley can point to saying, hey, this was my vision 3 years ago. We've accomplished X, Y, and Z. And now we need you to take us to the next point. And this is what I have in store for us. So I'm not worried.
Yeah. And our schedule's insane. Yeah. Did we just mess up 2 opportunities against great teams? Sure. But you look at, by the way, we got to get into that Big Ten West, because Minnesota's schedule, they only have 2 top 25 teams, period. We already played 2 top 10 teams and have 3 more back to back coming up. So we can show out against some of these bigger teams later. You just got to keep counting. You just got to get one step in front. You have to win this one first and move on. Hopefully by the end of the season, we don't even remember how bad that Iowa game hurt. There's still plenty of opportunity to show where this program is coming from.
I completely agree with you. And I did miss one, so we got one more question. I completely skipped over it. NorCal Terp asks, can you talk about some of the defensive scheme / lineup changes you think we may see against Minnesota? It seems something significant needs to change with the secondary in particular to prevent another blowout.
Yeah, I mean, again, like I said earlier, I just think the fact that, you know, Jakorian and Kenny, I think Jakorian will come back again. Like I said, when he was warming up for Ohio State, he was just running 100-meter dashes and just it did not feel right. So, like, he was legit that close and playing against Ohio State. So that's why there's that confidence that he is going to play. You know, he'll come expected to come back. Obviously, Kenny Bennett helps with the rotation there. I think that you're going to see a lot more, maybe some four down linemen at times to kind of counter that size in the Minnesota front. And then I think you see a guy like Laltez Rogers who kind of shifts. He can play the jack, can play defensive end, kind of shifted there, played both in fall camp. So he can maybe go down defensive end, and then you have Chop playing the jack. So so that's kind of one thing right there. So and then obviously you're going to see a lot of rotations with the interior linemen.
I'm just way too fat to believe that you can have a 100-meter dash as a warm-up for a game. Maybe we should slow that down a little bit. Run some 40s, for God's sake. Let's not tire ourselves out before the game.
Whatever works, man. Whatever gets them going. All right. Well, that's a wrap on this week's show. Appreciate you guys tuning in. As always, here's to wishing that Ahmed's prediction is wrong this week. Ryan, sign us off.
All right, guys. Well, like I said, we got four wins. We're 4-2. It's really not that bad. Just try to just focus on the number and not what just happened. We just need to keep counting. What's after four? Let's go get five. And until next time, here's to wishing all is well under the show.